of these things that have been mentioned on the KBOO website. This has been Air Cascadia 4. So October 1st, 2014, first day of full membership drive. Tammy Dean engineered the show for us today. Thanks for that, Tammy. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
And thank you, Chris. We're going to move on to further programming on Turning the Tide on Climate Change. It's our special day of programming here on KBOO Portland. We're happy to have you aboard. It's the first day of our pledge drive for the fall. And at 11 o'clock on the KBOO Bike Show, we're going to feature a journey of adventure and activism for women of Afghanistan. Also about how to find your bicycle when it's when you have to escape for an emergency disaster, natural disaster. At noon, we've got a cop apocalypse how with Francis Fox Piven and Arun Gupta. At 1 o'clock, Naomi Klein will be here in the studio live. At 2 p.m., Andrew Geller speaks with two guests about the collapse of Western civilization and also Don't Even Think About It, Why Our Brains Are Wired to Ignore Climate Change. And then Arun Gupta is back here at 3 to bring us up to 4 o'clock, a whole day of programming about climate change. We welcome you and hope that you'll become new members and renewing members out there in KBOO land. Right now, we're going to go to a discussion with between Kathleen Stevenson and Sharman Apt Russell talking about her book, Diary of a Citizen Scientist.
This is Kathleen Stevenson for KBOO. I'm speaking with award-winning nature writer Sharman Apt Russell, whose new book is Diary of a Citizen Scientist, Chasing Tiger Beetles and Other New Ways of Engaging the World. Sharman Apt Russell lives in southwestern New Mexico and teaches writing at Western New Mexico University. Her books include Standing in the Light, My Life as a Pantheist, Hunger, An Unnatural History, and An Obsession with Butterflies, and Anatomy of a Rose, The Secret Life of Flowers. Her awards include a Rockefeller Fellowship and a Pushcart Prize. Thanks for being with us on KBOO, Sharman Apt Russell.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
You say early on in your book, Diary of a Citizen Scientist, that you have always wanted to be a field biologist. Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, I immediately also say how I romanticize that. You know, just the idea of being outside, you know, kissed by the sun, competent in the natural world, spending long afternoons in a kind of rapture. My degree, undergraduate, is actually in conservation and natural resources. So I spent a lot of time reading John Muir and Henry David Thoreau and just that idea that you could make your living outside just was always so appealing to me. As someone who spends a lot of time now on the computer, who is essentially a reader and writer.
How does the idea that you always wanted to be a field biologist intersect with this idea of being a citizen scientist?
You know, that's what one of the wonderful things about citizen science is to me. It really is about the power to become something else and to kind of transform at any time in your life. It's adding something to your life so that you can suddenly study butterflies and be a lepidopterist, or you can, you know, join a research team that's monitoring your nearby river and suddenly learn about water systems and riparian ecology. And you can really just transform yourself into something else. It's a kind of renaissance world in which you can be multiple things through the help of other people and through the help of this whole field that's growing so much and will support you in this kind of changes you want to make.
What do you do as a citizen scientist?
Well, I've actually been in citizen science a fairly long time. For a number of years, I helped band birds as part of an avian bird population survey, and I've help catalog galaxies by going online to Galaxy Zoo, and I've worked with children and citizen science projects in the classroom. But what the big citizen science project I did for this book was to, with the help of two entomologists, two mentors, I studied the larval biology of the western red-bellied tiger beetle. And it took me, you know, 2 years to do two seasons of going out in the field, collecting the tiger beetle, rearing up its little larvae in my little terrariums, you know, documenting what they look like. You know, so it was really a long-term project into an area that actually no one knew the answers to. No one knew what these larvae looked like, and no one knew where they laid their eggs. And so that was pretty, you know, interesting and engaging.
And what kind of contribution do you feel like that work makes?
Well, I don't want to overstate that at all. There are so many, I mean, there are billions and millions of things out there that we know nothing about. And there, a lot of those are insects. As an entomologist once told me, you know, you could take any obscure insect and study it for a week, and then you would know more than anyone else on the planet. And I studied my insect for 2 years and still just know a little bit more about it. But there is this kind of map of tiger beetles in the world, and there is this little blank spot on that map, the larval biology of the western red-bellied tiger beetle, and I'm helped to fill that in, you know, to be the first person to describe what the first and second and third instar looks like, to start trying to discover where the females lay their eggs. What was gained was mostly for me, I think. You know, my re-engagement in the natural world, my learning to know the Gila River better, my connections with a new community and with scientists. What I do think you can say, and that's a big part of citizen science, is my filling in this little tiny part on this big map can be duplicated by 100,000 citizen scientists filling in a small part of the map. And then you really start seeing, you know, new knowledge. When 200,000 people work for the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, out there tracking birds, monitoring what birds are doing, I think they have a million observations each month on their online checklist. Then, through that kind of crowdsourcing, you really get new data, and you really are, you know, progressing our understanding of what's out there.
That's an interesting example, and you have many, many examples in Diary of a Citizen Scientist about work that's being done in various areas. Cite some other examples of what people are doing in citizen science that are interesting to you.
You know, I think one of the most exciting things about citizen science is its role in environmental activism. Because again, you have all these human eyes and human brains out there looking at the world. More and more people with more and more field guides are starting to map the distribution of species. They're seeing where the species are moving to or where they're leaving. They're looking at species behavior. And this is certainly part of, you know, a changing world. Climate change, as species retreat and as they advance, now we have people out there looking at that, many people. I'm part of a program called Nature's Notebook, which collaborates with Project Budburst and other programs around the world, actually, that are having people go out and look at what's happening in their backyard in terms of climate change. So are the trees leafing out earlier than usual? Or when are the flowers coming out? What insects are emerging? So we're really trying to get this big global picture of how a change in climate is affecting the natural environment. And all this can be put on a national and international database, and it just tells us all so much more than we used to know.
How are you in communication about that? I mean, how do you feel like you're part of a community when you do that?
So in Nature's Notebook, which is my particular program, I go out and I check the box elder and I check the wolfberry and I check the desert willow. I have about, you know, 17 plants that I'm monitoring. I'm also looking for certain animals. And then every week I log that data onto their national site. And so thousands of other Americans are also doing that all around the country. Most of citizen science is pretty smart, and the people initiating these programs are really clever, and their sites are often very user-friendly. I can look at the data that's being formulated into a report. I can look at what people in other places are doing. I know there's a woman named Lucille Tower in Portland, Oregon, who did the millionth observation some years ago. So you're kind of part of a whole new community, and you can communicate with them online, and you can communicate with your program, and you can see it in all these kind of clever interactive displays they have.
You are listening to a special day of programming related to climate change and turning the tide on climate change. I'm speaking with Sharman Apt Russell about her book, Diary of a Citizen Scientist, Chasing Tiger Beetles and Other New Ways of Engaging the World. And we're going to take a break right now and speak with our friends in membership so that they can tell us about how to support KBOO and how, at the same time, you might get a copy of Sharman Apt Russell's book, Diary of a Citizen Scientist.
Ah, thank you so much, Kathleen. We're briefly interrupting on this, the first day of our fall membership drive. My name is Justin, and I'm joined by Pear, and we can indeed put a copy of Sharman Apt Russell's book, Diary of a Citizen Scientist, Chasing Tiger Beetles and Other New Ways of Engaging the World. If you could start a membership, ideally as an electronic funds transfer, become a sustaining member at the $60 level, we can send you a copy of this book. In fact, I'd like to suggest you consider, maybe instead of doing that $5 a month, perhaps you could see your way clear to start a membership with a $10 a month donation, and we could send you a copy of this book as well as the DVD Disruption that we were hearing excerpts from earlier this evening. It starts and ends with you, dear listeners, getting involved and converting a little of your pocket change into social change. Won't you call right now, toll free, 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO or online at KBOO.FM to start or renew an electronic funds transfer, a sustaining membership, and contribute towards the $70,000 left to go. We have 10 days to do that, to make the goal, and we're waiting for you to call up and introduce yourself. 877-500-5266.
And anything over $75, we plant a tree in your name somewhere in Oregon. There'll be a tree with your name on it.
That is direct action indeed.
That's right. We need more trees. We need all the trees we can grow. Do it now. 877-500-5266 or anywhere in the world, KBOO.FM, or in person, 20 Southeast 8th. Come on down and see us.
We had a comment from Reed in Portland Online, who's been listening and made a donation there, I believe. Good on you for taking the day for climate change issues. This is the most important issue of our time. He goes on to say, but the deniers are so... science is fairly confident, the data is conclusive, but the deniers are so cleverly disguised in their tactics. Thank you for your work. Well, thank you, Reed, and we're hoping you will inspire others here to call up. Get a copy of Diary of a Citizen Scientist by Sharman Apt Russell, perhaps that Disruption DVD. Won't you do it right now? Toll free, 877-500-5266.
This is Kathleen Stevenson for KBOO. I'm speaking with award-winning nature writer Sharman Apt Russell, whose new book is Diary of a Citizen Scientist, Chasing Tiger Beetles and Other New Ways of Engaging the World. Sharman Apt Russell lives in southwestern New Mexico and teaches writing at Western New Mexico University. Her books include Standing in the Light, My Life as a Pantheist, Hunger.
Okay, turning that down, we're going to go to part two of this talk, so sorry.
And a This is Kathleen Stevenson for KBOO. I'm speaking with award-winning nature writer Sharman Apt What are the main challenges faced by citizen scientists? I know that accuracy is one of the areas that is brought up when citizen science is mentioned.
You know, that's less of a challenge for some programs because they have a redundancy that's part of the program. So when Galaxy Zoo has a volunteer classify a galaxy, 30 other volunteers are classifying it too. And out of that redundancy, the results are as accurate as any professional astronomer. When you have a local program and you're asking people to, you know, go out into a national park or something and look for certain plants or look for certain, properties, then you have to train them well. You know, you have to create a situation so that they know exactly what to look for and how to document it. So from program to program, the problem with accuracy varies. But again, there are almost always things that you can work with, that you can get the kind of accuracy that you would get anyways, in part because there's so many more people doing this. There's so relatively few biologists and ornithologists and astronomers out there now. We just need a lot more.
How do scientists feel about this generally? I know you had great mentors you describe in your book, Diary of a Citizen Scientist, working with the mentor, David Pearson.
Yeah, David Pearson is a big advocate for the citizen scientist, and so is Barry Knightley, who I worked with quite a bit. Well, I've always worked with really nice people, and maybe that's partly self-selecting. But I do really have a strong feeling that more and more scientists are embracing citizen science, in part because it helps them get their research done, especially using online crowdsourcing programs. You know, they can have 100,000 people help them look at images, you know, maybe brought back from the Hubble telescope. And so they don't have to do it themselves. They're able to do bigger projects and more large-scale projects because they can get all these people to help. But I think even as important, they understand that science has to be part of society, that science can't be separated from society, that they need advocates who are voting in funds to promote science, voting in education in the schools, voting in a support system for them. And so they just can't afford to be standoffish. They can't afford to have this separation. And I think they know that, and they're really embracing a world in which they have all these friends and companions and a larger community in which to work.
One of the things you mentioned in your book is that you attended a conference on citizen science a few years ago here in Portland. Talk a little bit about that conference and what it taught you.
Yeah, that was billed as the first large-scale open conference, and they called it Public Participation in Science. And, you know, I think some 300 people attended. There were people mostly working in the field of citizen science, scientists themselves, people directing programs, people from different agencies. It's such an exploding field, and there's just new stuff happening all the time, and so they were sharing all of that. There weren't that many actual citizen scientists like myself, and so that was fun to get a glimpse into the world where people are trying to organize this entire new endeavor. Again, I was struck by how much was happening in environmental activism. I was struck by how many graduate students are going into this field and reaching out. They're kind of the wave of the future. I was struck by how much good education is going on, starting to work with children in the primary schools and the high schools to really kind of bring up a population that just sees this as natural and normal, that they can be part of science and that they can engage in all kinds of ways.
You organized a class called How to Become a Leading World Authority.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about that and what you were doing there?
Right. Well, I did have this mentor who told me that if I picked one obscure insect and studied it for a week, I would know more than anyone else on the planet. So that's kind of a fun idea that you could become an authority on something, mostly because there's so much we don't know. There's so much to discover. We have a program that starts classes mostly for retired people, and I had wonderful ideas of having rooms full of wannabe citizen scientists. In fact, just a few people showed up, but they actually taught me a lot of things. One of them was already engaged in Nature's Notebook, and that's how I became acquainted with it. And the other person had a wonderful idea about using leaf concentrates and hydroponics. And you know, we became good friends, and it was kind of a fun idea that continues today, this idea of joining together in a club.
And are you still connected to those people?
Yes. And they've gone on. Allison is in a program that does tracking of wildlife, does a transect every 6 weeks in which they look for wildlife tracks to see what wildlife is going through the corridors. And Ed is part of a wilderness inventory area. It's a little addictive. Once you get into one citizen science program, you start seeing all these sparkly other citizen science programs. And if you're not careful, you'll just fill up your life with outings and field trips and citizen science projects.
There's a permutation of citizen science called the new wave or extreme citizen science. Can you talk about that and what extreme citizen science is?
Yeah. It started by a group in England, and citizen science really is breaking down barriers in class and in education. It will have a PhD scientist working with a teenager in the suburbs. So in that sense, it's inherently democratic. It's inherently kind of a revolution. Excite Citizen Science wants to do that even further. They want to take that further. They want the very research questions to come up out of the community, and they want the community of non-scientists to be much more in charge of the project. So an example that they're helping with, and they also want these projects to be in the places that that need science, that maybe have habitat destruction or that maybe have pollution, and that more and more need real solutions, not academic ones. So, for example, they're helping the native hunters and gatherers in the Congo Basin document where there's illegal logging or where there's poaching. And so they help with devising tools. They've devised these kind of smartphones that are for people who don't read, and that the pygmies and the pygmies of the Congo Basin can go out and use as citizen scientists in their own place. And that's what extreme citizen science is about. It's really about engaging communities, empowering communities to do their own citizen science.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Kathleen Stevenson, and I'm speaking with Charmin Apt Russell about her new book, Diary of a Citizen Scientist. And we are going to take a short break right now and speak with our friends with membership so that they can tell us about how to support KBOO, keep us going, and also, if you want to, as a thank you gift, get a copy of Diary of a Citizen Scientist, how you can do that.
It's easy.
It's very easy. Tell them all about it.
Yes. Call 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm, or come on down and see us at 20 Southeast 8th. And they all lead to one easy way of contributing is the electronic funds transfer, putting technology to a good use. And it's so easy to do. $5 a month adds up to $60 a year. $10 a month adds up to $120 a year. And that is a steady flow of income that keeps the station going. Do it now. It's so easy, and you can set your own amount. You can keep it going as long as you want. No worries, no work to do, no envelopes to mail or checks to write or anything like that. It is so very, very easy.
That's right. It just starts with a ringy-dingy, 877-500-5266. That's the number to call up. And introduce yourself on this, the first day of our fall membership drive. My name's Justin. I'm joined by Pear, and we would like to put a copy of this book into your hands, Diary of a Citizen Scientist, Chasing Tiger beetles and other new ways of engaging the world. That can be yours. Maybe you could do $10 a month, and we could also send you a copy of that DVD, Disruption, and that would be Undisrupted by Our Voice. Maybe you could give $90 a year. That would basically be 1 hour of KBOO a year. It amounts to 25 cents a day. Not a huge amount, not a bank-breaking amount, but whatever the amount is, we leave that to you. But we ask you to start an electronic funds transfer to make a consistent, modest gift that we can see coming, and it allows us to plan the year very well. Perhaps you might be preparing for the cold weather, and you might want to be one of the first on your block to get the new KBOO hoodie. And that's all black with a red star and a logo, greenish gray radio tower, community radio on it. There are limited quantities of this brand new KBOO hoodie. It looks very nice. These are only available to those who are willing to start an electronic funds transfer at the $20 a month level or higher. You can do that through a credit card or a debit card or through your checking account. Just call us at 877-500-5266. $20 a month or more, I think you will find that that's still not bank breaking, and we're asking you to consider doing that. You can make your donation online at kboo.fm, or you can come down here and talk about it at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. A lot of people are doing a lot of things. There's a lot of pins in the air to keep your community radio station going. Volunteers are working in every room. They're answering phone calls. They're preparing the news. Pear has taken time out of his day to come down and try and entice you to get on the phone. And restaurants are donating food to keep our volunteers going. I'd like to thank Grocery Getter Organic. Grocery Getter Organic, specializing in home delivery of organic groceries, independent and locally owned. More information at ggetter.com. We also want to thank Russell Street Barbecue at 325 Northeast Russell Street, committed to using sustainable meat, fish, and produce, and offering a variety of sauces and sides, vegetarian options, beer, wine, and full bar. RussellStreetBarbecue.com. Thanks to the Roxy at 1121 Southwest Stark Street in the heart of the Glamour District since 1994. TheRoxyDiner.com. And also thanks to Cannon's Rib Express at 5410 Northeast 33rd Avenue, serving hickory smoked barbecue and vegetarian fare. CannonsRibExpress.com. Folks, they've done what they can do today to make sure that your community station has what it needs. Have you done what you can do today? How about give us a call and introduce yourself? Toll free, 877-500-KBOO.
Okay, we have a little Glamour District right here. I'm looking at a picture of this KBOO hoodie. It is really a cool garment. It is really neat, and it's nothing else like it. And I guess for a $20 a month EFT, it
or
is
more.
Yours. So do it now. It's so easy. Come on down to see us or call 877-500-5266.
This is all part of a special day of programming on this first day of our fall membership drive called Turning the Tide on Climate Change. And we're grateful for all those who've called in already. And we're hoping many of you are moving to your phone and calling us to show your support to make sure that the action of our time is getting done. Toll free, 877-500-KBOO.
What would you tell someone who would like to become involved in citizen science, particularly, let's say, someone who is interested about working against climate change and trying to hold back climate change? What would you tell them to do?
Right. Well, I would go to the computer and Google climate change and citizen science. And if you wanted something specific to your state and region, you know, I would throw in that word too. It's pretty internet savvy, the whole field, and so it's something you can find pretty easily. There are some sites. There's a site called SciStarter, and that's capital SciStarter, and you can go to that site and find projects pretty easily too. But you could also just Google Portland and citizen science, and you'd come up with a program for studying urban coyotes, or you'd come up with a program for being a river keeper. You could go immediately to Nature's Notebook or Project Budburst, and those two specifically track animals and plants for climate change. So the information is so accessible, and that's important too. It's not hidden away in some academic journal or in someone's office. It's just out there.
And for you, what's happening for you and the tiger beetles these days? Are you still involved with that science?
Right. Well, of course, wherever I go now, I'm aware of tiger beetles in a way that I wasn't before. They're all bedded down for the season now and in their burrows, waiting to hibernate for the winter. There's still some unanswered questions. Barry and I had a great theory as to where the females laid their eggs, and it turned out to be completely wrong. And that was a great moment. It brought me back to those science fair days when, you set up a theory and then you tested it. And in my science fair days, I was usually right. I kind of arranged it that way. But as a real scientist, you have to expect to be wrong. That's okay. So I still have some work to do to answer those questions. And I'm thinking maybe about the oscillated tiger beetle. Who knows? I might move on to another species.
It's interesting to try to think of all the different species that we don't know about that someone could become interested in.
And that science doesn't know about. I mean, there are new species, being discovered. We'll put that in quotes. They were there all along, but, we're finding out about them. No, there's all kinds of ways you can engage that you would be a discoverer, an explorer. And again, that's kind of exciting.
Sharman Apt-Russell, author of Diary of a Citizen Scientist, Chasing Tiger Beetles and Other New Ways of Engaging the World. Thank you so much for speaking about this with us here on KBOO.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
And thank you for listening to KBOO Portland. We're going to go right to the bike show. Bush, then I see the Bush, to my